Good afternoon, everyone, and assalamualaikum, dear sister. I would like to present my study. It's about how religiosity might influence self-care among Indonesian Muslim adults with type 2 diabetes. My name is Iman Permana. I'm a lecturer from Universitas Muhammadiyah Yogyakarta, Indonesia. And at the moment, I'm doing a PhD study in University of Salford, Manchester. First, I would like to a brief outline, to the introduction about diabetes, self-care and religion, and aim and objectives, methodology, findings, limitations, opportunities, and conclusion and recommendation. As we all know, diabetes is a chronic illness which prevalence keep increasing for the last few decades. It's not only globally but also locally in Indonesia. So as you can see here, the data from International Diabetes Federation from the 2013, there's an increase almost triple in the 6 years, and it is predicted to be double in the next 20 years. And the problem with diabetes is the complication that it makes, because it can lead to another chronic illness, chronic condition such as stroke, heart problem, renal, and also the possibility of amputation of the limb. And it is affecting the quality of life. And you can see this that information about the morbidity and the mortality as well. So it is important to control the blood sugar to prevent complication. And then there are many evidences that show that lifestyle changes might decrease the diabetes risk and also reducing the long-term complication. So that's why the need to self-caring is more prominent to reducing the complication for the problem. And it means that it requires active involvement of individuals in managing their daily life activities. And there are many factors that influencing this self-care, such as social, financial, and cultural, including religion. I think we already know for the last 2 days we've been discussing about how religion and spirituality might influence many people in their life. So this in Indonesia, and even in Indonesia we have the state involvement in embedding religion in our basic law and constitution. And then we have 6 official religions, which include Islam, Christianity, Catholic, Buddha, Hindu, and Confucianism. And Islam is held by predominantly 88% population. But we are not an Islamic state, because we don't have a Sharia law. Okay, then I'm not going to discuss any more evidence on how religion affect health, but I would like to address the conceptual theory by Poulsen and Miles, which inform how African American people with type 2 diabetes see their relationship with God in order to self-manage themselves, in order to self-manage the condition. So they propose 3 typologies, which are God is a background, God is a forefront, and God is a healer. So the first 2 typologies, the participant in this typologies believe that they have to self-manage themselves. But also they believe that God is there all the time. God is supporting them in maybe with knowledge, with finding how to find appropriate doctor, with even with financial support. But in the end, the responsibility for the background is go back to the individual themselves. They have to be responsible for themselves. Whereas in the forefront, they believe that God is responsible for themselves, for the result. So those are people who believe that they have to self-manage themselves, but in regard of responsibility, they have a different the arguments. Whereas in God as a healer, they believe if they have a good, they have a strong belief in God, God will heal them eventually. But if they don't have a good faith, they will go to the doctor. So, and that is the conceptual theory that I would like to use. I used it in my study. And among current evidences in Indonesia about religion and health, I found several ideas like belief in, of a miracle, and Allah as a source, main source, as for illness and cure, and the importance of family member, and also the Prophet's method like eating halal food and abstinence from alcohol and tobacco. But despite of this evidence, we still have lack of evidence as how religion or being religious might influence self-care, especially in diabetes people. And this is the question that I would like to answer in this study. So I would like to, my aim is to explore the influence of religiosity on self-care activity among Muslim adults with type 2 diabetes, which objective is to determine the level of religiosity and self-care, and then to explore the meaning of religiosity in everyday life, and to generate new knowledge of how or if religion may be utilized to influence healthy behavior and inform self-care education program. It is a mixed method with explanatory sequential design, and I'm using two questionnaires. First one is Muslim piety, and the second one the summary of diabetes self-care activities. Two, as a screening tool to gather the patient for the semi-structured interviews. As you can see here, the question of Muslim piety is very, very Islamic and is very religious. So maybe everyone who keen on the more spirituality concept is not really keen on this, because it is very, very religious. So the reason why I choose this, because if I can borrow the term from yesterday's session, to being local, I would like to evaluate, to know the perception of Muslim from their own perception, from their own concept of religion. So there's a, I'm using that questionnaire. Then again, it's only as a screening tools, so I can get more information from the interviews. Okay. Then after I did my data collection, I have 100 participant, purposive sample of 100 from the database from 2010, from 610 patients, with a predominantly female, although not really significant, and age more than 50, with lower education and more regular income. And the interviews, I get 24 patient participants with more female than male, and also the age is in the middle and the older age range, so it's not quite different. If you can see from here, from by gender, the female is have cook. This is, I think this is high self-caring. This is high self-caring, this is low self-caring, yes. So the high self-caring participant come predominantly from a female patient, participant, sorry, and also the low self-caring patient. And by the age composition, it has a similar, almost similar composition, which high self-caring came from middle age and elderly age group. And key findings based on questionnaire and also from the interviews reveal that there is no structured educational program. And the importance of peer support and the feeling of distance in regards of relationship with the doctors. And lack of self-monitoring blood glucose practice and higher level of food care, which is actually related to religious activity, which I can describe you later on. more people perceive themselves as highly religious, which then again it is female participants consider themselves as more religious, and they regard themselves more keen to do ritual. And I've generated three themes with this, and one that I propose as my title is establishing the in regards of responsibilities, keep trying and live the rest of life, which is the title of my study. And this is refers to a concept in Islam, it's called tawakal. So I think I will skip this. And limitation of this study, of course, with this mixed method studies, it is not. I cannot generate this study to a bigger population, and then I think it is it needs more perspective in assessing the capability of the person. Like I think I need self-efficacy and gut locus of control to evaluate them, and no perspective from the Muslim cleric. Yes, I think it's important. And opportunities. I think the study can might support, might help to generate an education program with embedding their religious belief and activities, and collaborative work with Muslim cleric. Then conclusion, the concept of self-care has not been fully understood in among my population, and religiosity is important part in managing the illness, and the need to put effort despite of our decision, a concept of tawakal. And my recommendation to do a structured education training embedded with religiosity aspect. Thank you very much. I think the time is...
You are completely in time. We decided that I would have a little bit of time. I'm not the official leader.
Yes, thank you very much.
We've got two more minutes for discussion if necessary. Yeah, please.
I was just going to ask, because you know you said that you sort of, they were able to mark how religious they were. On that. Was that defined by themselves, or did you have some sort of scale to say, so did they think, okay, I'm religious?
Yeah.
Because some people, if you do play five times a day, then they think they're really religious, but there's more to it than just that. So how did they define it themselves, or was there some sort of, like, description or definition?
Yes, thank you very much. It's true, I'm using this questionnaire. It is a self-rated questionnaire. So the Muslim piety consists of religious belief, ritualistic, and then devotional, experiential, and consequential. So is spirituality the same as experiential? So I'm using this questionnaire, consists of 19 items, and then they self-rated themselves with this questionnaire. So ritual is only one of them. And you're right that most of them regard themselves religious by doing rituals. Mm-hmm. From this participants. You see, 96.5% of the participants regard themselves religious in doing ritual.
There are no further questions. Thank you, Iman, for
thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Actually, I would like now, Janos Sursikiewicz, is he here? He should give us a presentation on predictors of Polish students' life satisfaction. If he's not here, I would ask Deborah, Deborah Lissett from Coventry University, UK. You've done a study, or at least bring us the results of the Association of Religious Affiliation and Body Mass Index. Please.
Okay, so yeah, I'm going to talk about the association of BMI with religious affiliation, and that's from a national study that was carried out in the UK. And the Health Survey for England is an annual survey that happens kind of all the time, so it's data that's already collected, and then we can do kind of secondary analysis on it. So just as a bit of background, just to kind of remind you all about obesity and health, we know that rising levels of obesity are happening across the world. The UK prevalence from 2011 was 24% in men, 36% in women who are with a BMI over 30. And then we know as well that the increased risk of obesity is associated with all-cause mortality, ischemic heart disease, stroke, diabetes, COPD, cancers. Everybody kind of knows that stuff. And then as well that obesity is associated with psychological stress, which is perhaps lesser known, but there is kind of quite clear evidence now of a bidirectional increased risk of depression in those who are obese, but we don't know which comes first. Is it the obesity that causes the depression, or is it the depression that causes the obesity? And it seems to be a bit of both. So that's kind of obesity and health. And then what do we know about religion and health? Well, again, I'm not going to sort of labour this evidence because we've sort of been presented with some of it. But from observational studies, a systematic review, we know that religion is associated with a reduced risk of all-cause mortality, a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease, less depression and faster recovery from depression. And the association that's found, it's hypothesized that it might be mediated through lifestyle choices. For example, like Imran was saying, those who are more religious perhaps tend to smoke less or drink less alcohol, and that might be the reason why we're seeing some of those benefits in health. So if we think about obesity and health, and then we think about religion and health, well, what about obesity and religion then? And that's kind of where my interest sort of lies. So the studies that have been done to date about this are, again, just observational studies, so not high kind of quality evidence, but it's a start. And it's 19% of the studies that have been looked at show that lower body weight is amongst those people who are more religious have lower body weight. 39%, if you're more religious, you have a higher body weight. And then 6% of the studies have shown mixed results. And then 36% have shown no association. So really, it's very unclear. And I think you know, that's the key message. The higher quality cross-sectional studies do tend to show a higher BMI, which suggests perhaps that is more likely to be an association. But then, again, when you look at some longitudinal studies, only a few have been done, but no association has been found. So one of those frustrating things that we don't really have a clear picture. So, but nonetheless, I think because there is this kind of suggestion of a higher BMI in those who are more religious, then we need to think, well, if that is the case, you know, is there something that we should do about that in order to help with reducing sort of the burden of obesity? So this study is just a cross-sectional study exploring how... I'm skipping on too fast. So of those studies that I just showed you, two of the cross-sectional studies actually looked at the mediating effect of smoking status on obesity. So the fact that those who smoke tend to be leaner, is that why those who are more religious actually have a higher weight? Because they don't smoke, so that's bringing down the mean sort of BMI overall. And certainly two of these American studies did show that after you adjust for smoking status, you know, the effect is no longer seen. So perhaps that is what's going on. And so the idea is there that, you know, that weight sort of suppressing, the weight gain is suppressed by smoking because those in religious communities are smoking less. So with that background, I then applied that to the UK data to see what there is. We have all the studies, we have no data on dietary intake, there's nothing there at all yet on these studies. So what is the situation in England then? So the Health Survey for England is a cross-sectional annual survey and is representative of households in England. It's commissioned by the Department of Health and provides data on kind of population health, health behaviour, personal characteristics. And like I say, it's an ongoing annual survey. And I've actually looked at this data from lots of years, but I've actually looked at the data for 2004 just because they measured both religion and physical activity. And I think because we want to look at is there something mediating the effect or the association we see, then it would be good to have physical activity in there. So the size of the data is 6,704 for the 2004 data. And detailed interviews were taken by trained interviewers to collect the data. Height and weight was measured. But religion, all we had was this kind of affiliation. So a very nominal kind of idea about what religion was. And there was a list of 18 different religions, or people could choose no religion at all. And basically, we reclassified that into if people feel that they are associated with a religion, doesn't matter which one, or if they are not associated with a religion, just because, you know, there were more numbers if we split it up that way. There was detailed kind of information on fruit and vegetable intake, and like I said, we had physical activity information. Smoking, 7-day point prevalence, abstinence, and then we had quite detailed questioning on frequency and quantity of alcohol. But I will talk a bit about the limitations. This is all kind of self-reported data in a minute. But just to show you the kind of characteristics there of those who were affiliated to a religion and those that weren't affiliated to a religion. So you can see BMI is higher in those affiliated, but also that age, people are older, people are drinking less, and so they are smoking less, as you can see there. And then there is a difference as well in kind of social status. So although there's that increase in BMI, is it affected by these other things? And again, some of these other issues, gender differences as well, were there. So putting all this into a model to see what effect... what was causing this effect. First of all, an unadjusted regression model. You can see that the difference there is if you are affiliated to a religion, then your BMI was 0.7 kilos per meter squared higher. And then once we adjusted for all those other things, so put all the adjustments into a model of age, of gender, social, economic status, ethnicity, all of that into the model, it did account for most of that association. So, you know, more than half of the association was explained just by demographic factors. But then what I did was did separate models, adding in each of these behavioural effects. So by adding in alcohol, we could see how much that would affect the association between obesity and religion, and also whether diet and smoking and things had an effect. So... really, to cut to the bottom line, it was only the smoking that, when we adjusted for smoking status, that significantly affected this coefficient here. So again, similar to what the US studies found, that perhaps it does seem to be smoking status that might be explaining this relationship. Because of that, I thought, well, okay, so how can we kind of explore that a little bit further? So we split the sample into those who were smoking and those who weren't smoking, and to see what the effect was. And you can see there that this is in people who've never smoked, and actually those who were more religious did have a significantly higher BMI. So there seems to be a bit of an interaction there that, you know, once you break it down, it's not just to do with smoking, because those who didn't smoke still, you know, had this big effect. So that was the unadjusted effect. When we adjusted for all the other things, there was still a significant effect going on. So there's something there that's perhaps a little bit unexplained that we still don't really know about. So just to kind of summarise those findings, really, those who are religiously affiliated, we found had 0.7 of kilograms per metre squared higher BMI. And then more than half of that was explained by some of the demographic confounding variables. There was very little effect that we saw on this of alcohol, fruit and vegetable, and physical activity, so we didn't see that explaining the association. We did see the fact that people who were smoking less in the more religious groups accounted for some of that effect, but not all of it, and that among never smokers, but not among smokers and ex-smokers, there was a significantly higher BMI of around 0.45 kilograms per meter squared in those who were affiliated to a religion, and that kind of remains unexplained. So the strengths of the study, I think, were that it was a large representative sample, lots of I haven't gone into all the detail, but there was a lot done and a lot of weighting and that sort of thing done in the survey design to make sure it was representative. And our findings are consistent with some of the previous higher quality cross-sectional studies, which do show this higher relationship. Key limitations, and they are big limitations, is that the only measure we had of religion was this nominal affiliation. So there's no account for kind of intrinsic religiosity, which is really what you were talking about, you know, in terms of actually, you know, religion being part of the person rather than just a nominal thing. This is quite interesting as well, because this is an Australian study that was similar, a big kind of Australian population study, and it did find, again like we did, that higher BMI was associated with religious affiliation, but they also measured religious importance, which was kind of a measure of intrinsic religiosity, and they actually found the opposite effect in that. So actually, by exploring more about kind of the sort of intrinsic religiosity, we might be unpicking some of that you know, poor clarity of what we know already. Health behaviour measures were self-reported, and there was no measure of dietary energy consumption, which is obviously a key limitation. And then it's cross-sectional, so no temporality, dose response, no causation. So what does this mean then? Well, I think it really means that further research is needed to confirm or refute the findings of a higher BMI with religion, and we need to do that in prospective studies with better measures of religiosity, with better measures of dietary energy as well. And I think dietary energy is very important, because I'd like to leave you with kind of these two hypotheses, really. Is there something about the fact that in religious communities who can't smoke, who don't drink, is food then becoming, either it could be becoming a crutch, or is it being over-celebrated? And is that something that perhaps needs to be addressed? Or, you know, in religious communities, is there a greater need for health promotion, or is there a need for bringing in the kind of spiritual aspects and kind of doing an intervention, a bit like you were saying about your structured diabetes education intervention, which has a religious element to it for managing obesity, so that it becomes much more holistic. And that's it. Question. Yeah.
Did you examine the influence of race?
Yeah, that was just in as a confounding factor. Yeah, so it was no, it was just adjusted for, and it didn't have an effect on the coefficient.
Yes, I believe that.
But it was no, it didn't have an effect. Yeah, yeah.
Because mostly it's just a simple observation that among South Asian people, they have higher rate of obesity and especially diabetes.
Yeah.
Because of the consumption of food.
Yeah.
And then they culturally believe that the higher the BMI
yeah.
is wealth. Yes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
No, there was no. We had just adjusted for it in the model. It didn't really have a significant effect at all. So,
Did I understand it right that the religious variable was this dominant, or was this religious affiliation?
Yes. Right? Yeah. So it was just a binary.
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, sure.
What do you call yourself? You know.
Yeah, sure. And there was no item about any religious practice or something.
No, it was just literally, what is your religion?
Okay. Because it's always a problem. What says religious affiliation about the practice of faith?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the weakness. I mean, it's the first study that's been done in the UK, that's why we need more done. Yeah.
Did you, or did it mention anything about smoking behaviours within the religious community? Because although it's probably well known that there is a chance that they smoke less, there are still people, like, religion may not be the only factor that stops them from smoking, because there are a lot of people that smoke in the world just generally.
Mm.
So I was wondering if they mentioned anything about the smoking behaviours within religious communities.
I mean, the data is there that you can split up, you know, the percentage of smokers within each of the religions, but that chart that had kind of the percentage of ex-smokers, never-smokers in those who were affiliated to religion and those who weren't, but then we put that into a model so that we looked at the effect of that on the association, and yes, it did seem to explain some of it.
I was wondering if the study looked at whether the participants conducted exercise, because we know that BMI, if you have a raised BMI, the proportion of fat to lean body mass could be different compared to someone with the same BMI. So someone could have more muscle and less fat, and someone else could have more fat and less muscle, but have the same BMI.
Yeah.
So did it say anything about that?
Yeah. The exercise bit, it was adjusted for exercise, and that didn't have a big effect. But the measure of exercise wasn't that great. We haven't got data on, say, waist to hip ratio, so we don't know whether it's, you know, the same thing would be seen in body composition as BMI. But that's a really good question.
Would it maybe be a good thing to have put into the national survey thing that you use the information from then, because then people will be able to get more information out of the thing if people did have their body fat percentage in there or their body fat ratio, because some people, like my classmate, you know what I mean, have a very high BMI but not really very much body fat. So would it make more sense for the national survey to have body fat in it somehow?
Yeah, I think the problem with measuring body fat is it's expensive, because so people often don't measure it. Waist to hip, it's quite difficult to get an accurate, so BMI for big national surveys tends to be what we do.
Thank you, Deborah, for this interesting talk you gave. Now, let's make comment. Should give a lecture on the role and influence of Christian faith on art adherence and adherence counseling. But if not here, I'm asking Gazita Giba to give her talk on the association between health behavior and religion spirituality in adolescence. a cross-sectional survey among Austin High School students. I'm preparing the computer.
Okay. Thank you for the invitation to present my poster, Association Between Health Behaviors and Religion, Spirituality and Adolescence. And this study was part of my master thesis, and it concerns health promotion. And I use the term religion, but I mean both religion and spirituality. Surveys among adolescents in Europe are showing that the prevalence of certain risk factors for chronic diseases such as smoking, alcohol abuse, low fruit and vegetable consumption, and lack of physical activity is high among young people. And it is also known that these lifestyle factors influence one another and are further affected by social and environmental factors. First, I'll talk about the conceptual framework that guides our research. Many models exist which show how determinants of health are interlinked. One of the most known models is the rainbow model from Dahlgren and Whitehead. They are showing that there are unchangeable determinants. These are factors over which the individual has no control. And there are the individual lifestyle factor. This factor, the individual able to control, maybe not a 100% one, but a rather high 1%. And additionally, there are the social and community networks, and finally the living and working conditions, and the social, economic, cultural, and environmental conditions. And each of these factors has both a direct and an indirect influence on health and on each other factor. So it is a very complex influence. Koenig shows in his model of causal pathway also this complex influence, and we heard it yesterday. Here the initial source is religion. And they describe three main pathways to health, the psychological with positive and negative emotions, the social and the behavioral pathways. In our study, we investigated the association between religion and health behaviors, and there are also direct influences and indirect influences. Meanwhile, great evidence from America suggests that there is a positive association between religion and health behaviors. For example, healthy eating behavior, more physical activity, less often smoking, less often alcohol use and drunkenness. But most of these studies are done in America. Furthermore, there are only few studies which examine this relationship in young people. And so the aim of our study is to explore whether a similar association exists in adolescents in Europe and especially in Austria. We carried out a cross-sectional study by means of an online questionnaire. We randomly selected 7 high schools out of total 23 in the region. We interviewed the 11th grade pupils in these schools, standardized, voluntary, and anonymous. The dropout ratio was very low, certainly because the questionnaire was filled in during regular school lessons. So the study is population-based and representative for this school type and this age. Questions about health behaviors were taken from well-proven surveys among adolescents. We ask about food frequency, main meal frequency, physical activity, cigarette smoking, alcohol use, and eating disorder habit. And we generated a simple food frequency score and a main meal frequency score. And for eating disorder, we used the validated SCoFs questionnaire. To inquire religion, we used the validated centrality of religiosity scale, which measured five dimensions: the intellectual, the ideology, private practice, experience, and public practice. Control variables for the regression model, gender and stress perception, and we performed a pretest, and the study was permitted by the school inspector and the ethic commission. To address our research question, we performed correlations and regression analysis. So the results, the sample include 220 pupils, 80 boys and 140 girls. The average age is 16.4 year with a median and a mode of 16 and a range of 15 to 18 year. 72% of the pupils are Roman Catholics, 10.5% Protestant, and 2% are belonging to a non-denominational evangelical church, 1% to the Islam, 3% to other denominations, for example Greek Orthodox or Buddhism, and 11% to no denomination. And this percentage is representative for the Austrian statistic of the denominations. What are the results for the religiosity score? First, I will show that gender differences in religiosity score are highly significant. You see, in girls 15, in boys 12, the score value, the range is from 0 to 40. And according to the religiosity score, Huber distinguishes between the categorical group of the highly religious, the religious, and the non-religious. The highly religious has a score between 30 to 40, and below 11 are the non-religious. And you see there are about 68% girls and 46% boys in the religious group, and there are only 6 pupils in the highly religious group, 4 girls and 2 boys. And about 50% boys and 30% are non-religious. And this percentage is also representative for the Austrian statistic. Now I will talk about the correlations and about the correlations between the religiosity score and the health behavior. It's only here interesting, not about the dimensions. And the analysis show that there is a significant positive correlation between religion and healthy food choices and with main meal frequency. Additionally, there is a significant negative correlation with cigarette smoke daily and with frequency of getting drunk. And as you see in the number of cigarettes and drunkenness, there are the strongest associations. As I told, there are gender differences in religiosity score, so there are gender differences in the correlation between health behavior variables and religiosity score too, and significant differences. And the analysis in girls show significant positive correlations between religion and main
meal frequency and negative one with smoking, in this case with frequency and with number of cigarettes and also with drunkenness. In the case of boys, there is a significant positive correlation with physical activity, both frequency and duration, and with food frequency. The purpose of the regression here is not for causality, because it's a cross-sectional study, but to generate hypotheses. We applied binary logistic regression models, and for which, as for each health behavior, as dependent variables, and the religiosity score, and the other health behaviors as independent variables. And so we generated binary categories, 0 as the healthy one, and 1 as the unhealthy one, and you see fruits, for example, at least once a day, the healthy one, and neither fruit nor vegetable once a day, and so on. And the results of the regression model indicate that religion is a significant predictor for the number of cigarettes smoked daily and drunkenness, even after controlling for gender and stress perception and other correlated health behavior. For example, of drunkenness, this means that the likelihood of getting drunk on more than one occasion is 17 times more likely in smokers, twice as likely in those who have less than 2 main meals a day, and 10% less likely for every unit increase in religiosity score. And in the number of cigarettes smoked daily, religion is also associated with a significant 10% reduction for the likelihood of smoking more than 2 cigarettes daily. These results imply that in our population, the religiosity score doesn't predict smoking or drinking alcohol, but predict extensive use of cigarettes and alcohol. Other studies in America have shown that religion predicts drinking alcohol and using and smoking. The limitations, although we looked for a population-based representative sample and put in great effort on bias control, we couldn't include all determinants on health and health behavior. I show in the beginning how complex the interaction of different health determinants are. And health behaviors are affected by many factors. Not only health, but also health behavior are affected by many other factors. And maybe this is one explanation that the effects in the association between health behavior and religion are rather low. An additional reason could be that there were only 6 pupils which are highly religious. But concluded, this study shows that religion is positively associated with health behaviors, and the role of religion in health behavior should not be ignored. But further studies are needed to explore the influence of other confounding or mediating variables on dissociation. This should include socioeconomic status, family dynamics, social influence, peer group, and so on. For this reason, in surveys investigating health behaviors among adolescents should include questions on religion, a short questionnaire. With further research, we will be able to better understand the role of religion in health behaviors. We can then go on and explore how we can help people to build on their own identities and beliefs, to have a positive influence on health behaviors. Thank you.
Yes, very interesting. This is from Austria.
Austria.
So, in regards of knowledge about religion, how do these adolescents have this knowledge? I mean, if I'm talking about my country, we mm-hmm. have like religious affair study in school, at mm-hmm. school. So I'm just wondering, where does this adolescent get their knowledge about
About the religion?
Yes.
It's traditional from parents.
Family.
Yes, it's rather traditional.
Okay. Yes. May I add that in the survey which was done, in Austria, there are so-called state acknowledged churches, and they need to have a certain percentage, which is 0.2% of the whole population, need to be in that church that it is state recognized. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones which were in the survey. And those are the ones who have a legal right to have also religious teaching at school.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's not always performed.
So you have also religious teaching at school?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My question goes in the same direction. I was wondering, not religious teaching, but the health teaching in the context of religion. Is it part of this school teaching, or where does this effect comes from? Because that you've shown, because from the Adventist health studies, for example, we know that in the Adventist community there's clear recommendations about healthy lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I was not aware, and you've shown that 72% of your sample were Catholic. I was not aware that there is some similar recommendation, official recommendation within the church about health principles.
Oh, yes.
And that was my question. Mm-hmm. Is it more an implicit thinking and implicit recommendation mm-hmm. to take care of your body, or what would you think? What produces this effect in this mainly Catholic sample?
Mm-hmm. That will be interesting for further studies, I think, because there are studies, surveys among adolescents, which shows that, for example, a good family situation, a good atmosphere to be loved, have a great influence on health behavior. And maybe it's an indirect influence because a Christian family in Austria is maybe as in every country in Europe, is it you are Catholics, but you are not really religious. It's only on the paper, but religious, really religious family, there is a other atmosphere, and maybe this is a positive
okay.
influence, an indirect influence, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the reason, because it will be very interesting to have questions about religion in this service.
Mm-hmm.
There are standardized surveys in Austria, in Europe, but no questions about religion. And I think it would be very interesting to see the influences. And I think it needs good models, statistic models, to have a meaningful result of these questions.
As far as I know, it's only the Seventh-day Adventists have a real structured teaching mm-hmm. on health behavior within their church setting and setting with their youth. There are other denominations which are highly who do rule a lot into the lives of their people, like Jehovah's Witnesses, mm-hmm. who have also a high grade of do's and don'ts.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be, the more there is a highly ruled over daily life affairs, that there is also more teaching in this direction. But I'm not aware of any study in our country or in Middle Europe done in that area. I know just from churches, evangelical churches, that they tend to be a little bit legalistic in a certain sense, but also with the legalistic it's not socially accepted within these subgroups to drink, to smoke. The further you go to the east, for example, the further it's actually banned in the churches. But we have actually no statistical model where we cling to it or where what we could have done in this realm, because Austria is a very traditional country, and as my wife said, it's those who name themselves Catholics are Catholics just by the right of born and not by their intention, but their perception, by their real internal values. Yeah. I think this is the reason why it was very good that there was this Hoover score was done with the different dimensions, because this helps you a little bit to distinguish if it's more a formal thing or you mentioned this intrinsic, extrinsic religiosity.
And I think it fits from the results that you said. It does not predict the smoking or the drinking of alcohol, but it predicts about the abuse. So I think that makes very much sense.
I think what you said in your talk is also an important factor, a mandate for your body.
Yes.
Yeah. I think this is probably also something that people who live in relationship with God, let me just say it in my words, that they start to understand they have a mandate, a God-given responsibility for the body they live here in this earthly life.
Yeah, but the thing is sometimes the boundary of what is harmless and harmful is not really clear. So let's say like in my book, well, I'm not trying to generalize, but we have like most people smoking in Indonesia, although we are Muslim. But we have many people who smoke, even from the primary school children until the elderly. So even, this is very individual. There is one gentleman that believe that this is his own right to smoke, right? And he's willing to get off from his affiliation to a Muslim organization when that organization declared that smoking is banned. You know what I mean? So he's willing to get off from that organization just to keep him smoking. So it's very loosened in Indonesia.
Are there any other questions now to this topic?
I'm just wondering what the ethnicity was of all the participants that took part, and whether the food frequency sort of form that they did was sensitive to that. If there were people of different any ethnic minorities that took part, were they able to put up the food frequency report, and were the foods that they normally eat on there and stuff like that?
I don't understand. So
there were two questions, as far as I understand. The first question was which ethnicities were in there, also the ethnischen Gruppenband. And the second question was in the food frequency, were they in a way that different ethnicities could really cling to or found themselves represented in? So open in Essens Fragen oder Mahlzeit Fragen. Das auch abgebildet war mit den ethnischen Gruppen.
It's a group in Austria, in one country. There are no ethnic groups, not many ethnic groups, and it's one limitation of the study. We didn't ask about the socioeconomic status. Because I I did this study by my own, and so I had to look a sample representative, but not too big. And so we decided one school type and one age. And the school type, we ask, there are rather similar ethics groups. It's more easy. Yes, it's. But these are really important questions for further researchers. And so it will be very necessary to ask questions about religion in service, in bigger service. Mm. Thank you.
If there are no more questions to Gabi, are there any questions? Two people did not show up, so we have a little time over. Are there any questions or something anybody would like to mention? I would give a few more minutes for it, so because it's a small group, and I think it was very interesting. It's about diabetes and religiosity, about BMI and religiosity, and about the health behavior among adolescents. You have three experts here who have done scientific work. You can use this as a chance to ask any more questions or ask the questions you don't dare to ask.
Maybe it is interesting to know how our undergraduate student here perceive about this meeting. Because it is very, for me, it is very specialized. It is very specific. And what they may, what influence they make, they gather in for future, for the effort for their future.
Probably just thought that we will not elongate it too much. Let me ask or rephrase it. Yeah. And anybody would like to say something? What is the most important thing you're going to take home from this conference? Okay. Let us make just a brief flashlight. And is there anybody who likes to?
I have a social policy background, so so my research was about the role of spirituality in drug recovery. So my in this environment, it is like my first experience. But let me ask you a question, because I assume that the results are cultural affected, because we in Malta we are predominant Catholic as well. But I think our attitude, our behavior towards, because I don't know the numbers exactly, but I know that we have a high rate of obesity. So it might a cultural thing rather than it is a religious thing about the result of the sample.
I think it'd be interesting to do similar studies in the Maltese population.
There have been studies that have looked at people that have moved, haven't they, from somewhere and somewhere else, and then when they've gone into their social kind of area, they have an obesity has become more predominant. There have been studies looking at where populations have moved, or people have moved to different countries, and then when they have developed in their kind of cultures, they've taken on those principles and developed the type of diseases that you would see within that population.
Mm-hmm. There's a difference between first generation movers or second generation, so you don't find a large difference between those folks who are the second generation, but in between the first generation you find it. Anyone else who would like to contribute? Brief.
I think it's just highlighted that obviously there is a big importance for a lot of people, religion, spirituality. But I think from what I've heard that it's very difficult to measure this because of people, you know, the affiliation that you've seen where people saying they're religious and not being religious. So I haven't really come to a conclusion
that if it does have a cause or effect. But I think, therefore, people just need to be prepared. I think as healthcare professionals, I think people just need to be prepared for if people are religious or have a spiritual need.
I think you're pointing to one of the central problems in the whole realm of scientific research in regard to religiosity, spirituality, and health effects, health behavior, and everything else. I think the intention to do this research either comes from the own spirituality researcher has, or from the intention just to do best for the patient. And this topic is coming up more and more among patients and the needs of patients. Yeah. I don't know if all of you have been in the morning lessons of Ms. White or Ms. Wada, sorry. But she also stated this example of a guy who said, I don't want to be cared for in this area. And I'm also reminded of how I do it in my practice when I do a ward round and I have a patient where I think here I have a problem with depression. I'm in internal medicine. I try to figure out if this is a real problem, and then I try to refer him to the psychologist and the psychiatrist. But if the person doesn't want to go there, it's up to him or her. And I think this is also something I need to adopt with religiosity and spirituality to figure out if there is a need there and if there is to hold my hand to help him. And if he or she will not, do you think, okay, it's okay? I think all of us who are in healthcare, we have a great heart, the heart of trying to help people, and there is an intention to do good, but not always people perceive it that way. And I think you were really right. And so those measurements, at least the fact that there are so many different measurements out there which are used, shows that it's not easy.
Is with the Indonesian and the self-management, because you mentioned that you didn't speak to any faith leaders or any imams, and I was just wondering why that is, because a lot of people, they're linked to their religions, often their imam, and if their imam tells them leave it in the hands of God, then they'll probably listen, and if they're not self-caring and that's the reason why, then yeah, I was just wondering why.
Yeah, it is my limitation of my study. So I just based on how they gather their knowledge from social activity.
So did you kind of get an understanding of what kind of information they were getting from the imams, or did you not touch on that at all?
No, I didn't. But it will be a good recommendation.
Thank you very much. To all of you, thank you to those who have lectures you have prepared. I know it's a lot of effort you have put into it. Thank you for those who came here to ask questions. You made an important contribution.